Drover saw my battle wounds, and as you might expect, he was deeply impressed. Boy, Pete sure trashed your nose. Thanks, pal. Did you see what I did to him? Well, maybe not. I gave him full air horns in the face. I parted his hair, flattened his ears, rattled his teeth, blew his socks off. Yeah, but you're the only one wearing blood. I towered over him and gave him a worldly smirk. That's right, Drover, and I wear it proudly. Do you know what we call this? Well, let's see. A bloody nose? No. Lacerations and hemorrhaging? No. Well, let me think. Facial trauma? I glared down into the emptiness of his eyes. You've missed the whole point, Drover, and please stop showing off and using big words. Nobody is fooled by your childish expeditionism. You mean exhibitionism? I mean exactly what I said. What did you say? I don't know what I said, but I said it, and I meant every word of it. It was a big word. Of course it was a big word. Do you think I'd waste my time with scrawny little words? No, sir. We should all strive to enlarge our respective vocabularies, Drover, and it wouldn't hurt you to use a big word every now and then. He rolled his eyes. Boy, I sure get confused. I thought you just told me... Never mind. Let's return to my original question. I pointed to the scars on my nose. What is another name for this? Well, wreckage? We're out of time and you failed the quiz. I'm sorry. You couldn't help it. Thanks. It's called the Red Batch of Courage because it takes a batch of courage for a dog to accumulate all these scars. One of these days, maybe you'll win, son. Not if I can help it. What? Speak up, you're muttering. I said, oh boy, scars, blood, scabs. Just what I've always wanted on my nose. I gave him a little pat on the back. It'll come, just be patient. And always remember, Drover, it's not the size of the fight in the kite that matters. It's the size of the fog in the dog. He stared at me. Hello? Did you hear what I said? Yeah, but I don't get it. That's as clear as I can make it, son. When you grow up, many of life's mysteries will be revealed. Until then, just watch me and study your lessons. At that very moment, my lecture was brought to an end by little Alfred, who had gone to the back door and was holding it open for us.
Come on, doggies. Let's go inside the house.
I went bounding across the yard and joined up with our little pal. But then I noticed that Drover was hanging back. Hey, come on. What's the problem?
Well, we're not allowed in the house. Sally Mae's
gone, and she left her son in command.
That's scary.
And besides, Slim is sick and needs us to nurse him back to health.
Yeah, but what if Sally Mae comes home and finds us? She might cut off our tails with a butcher knife.
Drover, please. You already have a stubbed tail, so you've got nothing to lose.
Yeah, but what if she cuts off our heads?
Then your two ends will match. You'll have a stub head to go with your stubbed tail. Now come on and quit whining. At last he joined us. Not joyfully, I must say, but casting glances over his shoulders and looking as guilty as the cad who ate the canary, or whatever it is. He didn't look happy about entering the house, is the point. I knew what to do when we got inside. I went straight to an old rug on the floor of Sally Mae's utility room, went straight to it and flopped down. Do you see the importance of this gesture? Maybe not. Let me explain. See, when we dogs are invited into the house, which is very rarely, we feel honored to be there. And the way we express our feelings and so forth is to establish ourselves in the utility room, which is also known as the mud room, the laundry room, and the take off the dirty boots room. It's the one room in the house, don't you see, that isn't as clean as all the other rooms in the house, which means that it's sort of a halfway chamber between the dirty outdoors and the clean inside. When we dogs show a willingness to set up shop in the utility room, it sort of shows our great respect for the rest of the house. It says to our human friends, hey, we know we're just dirty dogs and we don't deserve to lie on the nice carpets or sleep in the chairs or do any of that other stuff that a dog might find pretty appealing. It says, hey, this is great. No dog could ask for more. We're perfectly happy to be out here with the, well, dirty boots and soiled laundry and the cold draft that always seems to be coming under the back door. You get it now? It impresses our human friends when they see a dog who's happy with simple gifts. Nobody likes a dog who has no class or manners, who goes loping through the house the minute he gets inside as though he owns the place. These little things are important. The other side of the deal is that once we've established ourselves as happy dogs in the utility room, we can always... How can I say this? I wouldn't want to give the wrong impression. See, all of life's situations consist of a plan A and a plan B. The happy dog scenario is your basic plan A. And once we've taken care of plan A, we can go to work on plan B. At this point, I can't reveal the exact nature of plan B. I mean, I wouldn't want anyone to think, you'll just have to figure it out for yourself. And I'll bet you'll never guess the true nature of our plan B. Okay, we were inside the house, out of the cold wind and swirling dust and so forth, and we were the happiest two dogs in the whole entire world. We couldn't have asked for more. We couldn't have dreamed or hoped for better. Being in a warm, clean house was the fulfillment of our fondest wishes. Fondest wishes, I should say, and even if little Alfred had invited us to go deeper into the house, nay, even if he had begged us to venture into the warmer, more comfortable rooms of the house, it would have been our duty to turn him down. No thanks, kid. We're dogs. We know our place. We know your ma and understand her feelings about dogs in the house. Now the utility room is good enough for us. So there we were, as happy as two clams in something. A pot of clam chowder, I suppose, although if I were a clam. So there we were, as happy as two dogs could be, and I want the record to show that we remained in this state of utmost contentment for, 5 minutes or so. 10 minutes. A long, long time. It seemed hours, actually, because, well, it was kind of boring out there, and also, the floor was cold. And I want the record to show that it was Drover who made the first move. All at once, he raised his head. Hank, I'm thirsty. I raised my head and gave him a scowl. How could you be thirsty? We're almost in winter. It's cold outside. I know, but I'm thirsty. I'm dying for a drink. Why didn't you get a drink outside? We have 2 stock tanks down at the corrals and 2 miles of Wolf Creek. That's where dogs are supposed to drink.
Yeah, but I didn't know I was thirsty back then, and it was too far to walk.
Oh, brother.
You're not thirsty?
No. Well, maybe a little, but I have something called iron discipline. I can wait.
Boy, not me. I've got a terrible thirst, but where would a dog get a drink in here?
I don't know, Drover, nor do I care. Please stop complaining and try to show... I wouldn't mind a little drink myself, come to think of it. I pushed myself up on all fours and crept to the door that led into the kitchen and the rest of the house. Alfred was nowhere in sight, but I could hear voices coming from the living room. I lifted one ear and monitored the conversation.
How do you feel now, Swim?
I feel like warmed over chicken manure. I ain't got any energy and all I want to do is sleep.
I bet you've got the measles.
I ain't got the measles.
What about all those red spots?
It's allergies. It's got nothing to do with measles. Let me sleep another hour. I'll be okay. Stay in the house and don't do anything foolish. And keep them dogs outside.
Okay, Swim.
As I was monitoring this conversation, I began to notice that, my mouth was very dry. And all of a sudden, I was dying for a drink of water. It's odd how a sudden thirst will come upon a dog in the middle of winter, a time when you wouldn't expect us to get thirsty. I suppose it comes from our busy schedules. I mean, in the wintertime, a guy forgets to drink water, and then all at once, I left the kitchen door and moved a few steps to the east. Here was another door which led into a small, dark room. I peered into the gloom. All at once, my nose, which is a very sensitive smellatory device, began picking up faint traces of water. Hey, we were making some progress. Drover had thought you couldn't find water inside the house? Ha! What did he know? I had found water because I'd had enough ambition to get up off my duff and go looking. Drover, on the other hand, had been content to stay on the rug and whine about it. I tiptoed into the darkened room, following my nose toward the unmistable scent of fresh water. After going 10 or 12 steps, I found the source. It appeared to be a spring, a natural spring of fresh, sparkling water, right there in the house. Boy, what a nice surprise. And an even bigger surprise was that this spring came bubbling out of the ground into a big white bowl. I mean, it was the perfect height for dogs to drink out of. In fact, I began to suspect that it had been put there for this very purpose. Can you believe that? Sally Mae had developed this nice little spring just so her son's loyal dogs could get a drink when they came into the house. She was a pretty fine old gal, that Sally Mae. Anyways, I hopped up on my back legs, stuck my head into the bowl, and started lapping. Great water. And yes, I'd been pretty thirsty, even though... All of a sudden... Well, you'll see.